Okay, very good evening to all. Kayamitas, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Thursday class, 21st May 2020. So we'll be having our Heart Sutta sharing. We are at page 80, lesson 14. But before we go into it, we will do our usual chanting. So puja chanting. Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Okay. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajjiya Moni Pho. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Milo Pho. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipano Bhagavato Saukasango Sanghang Namami. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu vicacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sura meraya majapamatatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you can be seated. After this, we shall have half an hour of silent inner awareness meditation. So as usual, you just have to relax body and mind, then maintain awareness. Always remember, you can only do one thing at a time. Either you are aware or you are lost in thought. If you are not aware within your self nature or your awareness within at your heart area, then you are lost in thought, heedless. So maintain the awareness is very important. So maintaining awareness means from inside you aware of outside. Before you perceive anything or know anything. That's why just relax away. The four support, the first three is very important. First support is relax into every mind state that arises, whether it's your physical body or your mind state. Relax, just relax. Be at peace with everything. Then don't try to think of anything. Don't try to resolve anything. Just let things be. Let the mind settle down on its own. Be at peace. That is what meditation is. To just relax body and mind and maintain awareness to develop the understanding of what is going on. And that is meditation. Then the third support is 24 hour. Means you maintain the awareness, the silence within for as long as you can. So most of the time, it will just be aware, then no more. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. Do not allow the senses to draw you away, to proliferate your thinking. Means you get lost in the process through your senses. When you hear something, then you lose your awareness. You proliferate your thinking. You get yourself indulged in it or involved in it. But the moment you are aware that you are doing that, then you come back to your awareness nature. Finish. Don't try to know. No need to know. You keep on relax, maintain awareness. Then the mind will slow down. Everything will slow down, then quiet down until you can realize that true mind, the silent mind. Just stabilize it. You can do it in any posture, whether sitting or lying down or sit on a chair or lean against a couch. It's up to you. Okay, we can do it now. For those will of the light, for those who need to maybe develop the mind sweeping method or a skillful means to help you develop the training of the mind to be mindful, to anchor the mind, you can also use it. It's up to you. But if your spiritual faculty is already there, you don't need them. Then most of the time, if you know how to use the four support, especially the first three, you don't really need any method or technique. Just relax, maintain awareness. Then everything will fall back to that quietness, that stillness. Then develop the ability to be aware of the silent within. The silent within is your silent mind, your meditative mind, your true mind. That is the one that you have to develop the ability to be aware of. That silent within, that tranquil state, tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind, the awareness. So when you can stabilize that, then you can be aware of your self nature. And that self nature is just an awareness nature. It's just aware. No word, nothing, no concept, cannot think. The moment it starts to perceive or think is the mundane mind already. And the two are very near. From the nature, the mundane mind manifests very fast. The aggregates of mind is surface very fast. So meditation is to see all this, to understand all this. Then Stay with the silence. Stay with the awareness. Maintain that stability. And that is your true mind, your meditative mind. All of meditation is to realize that mind. It is from that mind you meditate. Without realizing that silent mind, the self nature, the awareness nature, the true mind, you cannot meditate. Because the Dhamma that we try to develop, the understanding, is sakaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. So you cannot use the thought. You cannot use the instrument that is below it. If you use thought, then your instrument of thought is limited. It cannot understand or realize a state that is beyond thought, beyond mind. That's the reason why you need to develop this training to be aware. And Huineng's teaching is very beautiful. The three hallmarks of Huineng when it comes to meditation. The first hallmark is no thought, wu nian. To have that state of no thought, you need to relax and maintain awareness. So that the sankhara activity, the mundane mind, the thinking, whatever that is still going on, it will slow down and finally cease. Realize that. Then stabilize it. And then you will have the meditative mind develop and you will know how to meditate from there. Okay? I will now set the alarm for half an hour. Then after that, you all can continue your meditation until the alarm trigger. Then I will ring the bell 3 times. After you hear the bell, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Okay, you all can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. So these are the mind states that you need for you to develop the daily mindfulness. Then maintain awareness within, ever mindful, is very important. And you can accumulate all this stability or cultivation into the daily mindfulness until you are ever mindful, even in the midst of life throughout the day. Whatever you do, you are constantly aware, ever mindful. Most of the time, you are just aware without much thinking. It means you are hardly heedless, lost in thought. If you can develop that, then my nature will rejoice with you. The daily mindfulness is the real meditation. Not until your sati in the midst of life can be stabilized, until you can cultivate sati sampajana, the real meditation cannot begin. So always remember, for you to really develop the stability of mind to meditate, you need to stabilize this daily mindfulness. Okay, now we will do the invocation to the devas. Those who have the chanting book, you can turn to page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine or teaching of the king of sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchantu devata. Satamang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkadang dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuto vijacarana sampano sukato lokavidu anutaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditago Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Samicipatipanno bhagavato saukasango Yaditam chattari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato saukasango Ahuneyo, Pahuneyo, Dakineyo, Anjali Karaneyo, Anutarang Punyaketang Lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you can be seated, maintain some form of attention, then we will continue from where we stop. We are at page 80, lesson 14 of the Heart Sutta. This one was delivered at Wu Pingqing's the Mahayana Vihara, dated 27 May 2012. It was about 8 years ago. Okay. The first recap and emphasis on the previous lesson is on the first noble truth, life and existence following the five universal nature's order or Pancha Niyamas. So these are the five universal order of nature that the Buddha came to realize. He said, all of our life and existence, we are governed by these five great orders. Yeah. They govern all of our life and existence. So understanding this five universal order will give rise to the understanding of life. So I will go into that detail. According to the Buddha, within our conditioned world of life and existence, everything within is conditioned arising. Or sometimes they say it is due to causal. Without cause, there is no arising of all this. Okay. Okay, we will just it, yeah. Ah, okay. Now, can you hear me? Ah, good. Okay. So, we every time have this starting problem. Luckily, Ananda was very fast. Huh? So, okay, I will maybe repeat the whole thing easier. Huh? Life and existence following the five universal order of nature or Panchaniyamas, as explained by the Buddha. According to Lord Buddha, he said, our existential world means our universe. We exist in a conditioned world. So within our conditioned world of life and existence, everything is conditioned arising. Or sometimes they call it causal phenomena. Because according to the Buddha, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. So because of these causes, the phenomena arise. So all conditioned phenomena or causal phenomena, they have this universal characteristics of impermanent, where they arise dependent on condition. Without condition, nothing happens. Everything is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. And this condition behind, they are the manifestation from the five universal order, Panchaniyamas. These are the nature's law that governs life and existence. So you understand these five nature's order of Panchaniyama, you will understand life. And you know how to abide by this law. You will develop wisdom and good understanding. So right view means having right understanding of these five great law that governs life and existence. And of the five, the first two are scientific law. According to the Buddha, the first two scientific law are called Utu Niyama and Bija Niyama. Utu is physical law of nature. Then Bija is the biological order of nature. So these two aspects, they are scientific law. And the scientists has progressed so fast is because they have penetrated these two laws. That's the reason why you look at our planet, yeah? Our civilization over the past 5,000 over years of recorded civilization, means our present civilization. We will come to realize one very important point. Not until the last 40 to 50 years, we are actually still very primitive, or very lacking in our understanding of science. That's the reason why the past 5,000 over years, we didn't really progress much. Until the last 40 to 50 years, especially after World War II. Because scientists has progressed, we have penetrated the understanding of science, especially these first two laws, physical law of nature and biological order of nature. We were able to make use of all this understanding of the nature's law to develop a lot of very innovative finding that helps us to progress very, very fast. We have breakthrough many aspects of life. In the early years, when we started, life was very simple. Then we have food problem. Then human being develop penetrative understanding of the biological order and agricultural understanding. That's how we started with the agricultural revolution. Then with the agricultural revolution, we don't have food problem. Then after that, we realize we have job problem, not enough job, not enough activity. That's how industrial revolution come about. We progress further through the Industrial Revolution, we have industries. We have a lot of this understanding of how to develop the industries to help provide job for humanity and also manufacture things that we need. But there are certain things that we actually don't need, like weapon and all those things, but they go into it because of Industrial Revolution. Then after these two, we realized we had enough food, we have enough job, but then things were very slow. That's how we come up with the technological revolution, where technology comes into being. The IT technology, the IT transformation, so that things can be done faster, information technology. That's how banking data transform the way we do things. E-commerce, online banking, and all the other aspects of artificial intelligence. The IT revolution has actually transformed us very, very extensively. That's the reason why our human civilization progressed so fast, evolution. So because of the physical law of nature and the biological law of nature, the scientists were able to progress by leaps and bounds over the last 40, 50 years. Our aeronautical technology, flight technology, space technology, satellite technology, including a lot of our various types of scientific discovery that leads to the biological, genetic engineering, etc. Biological not only breakthrough in the physical aspect of civilization, we are able to go into the biological order where all of biological things obey this law. Like our human life, then all of plants, animals, fish, or whatever that exists that has this organic formation within, and they follow biological law like genetic engineering, DNA, and all those things. So scientists, after they had developed understanding of these two laws, they progress very fast. They develop a lot of great progress, and this has helped humanity in many ways, to have better life, to have better understanding of nature and life. But at the same time, because of their lack of complete understanding, it created another aspect of problem to us, pollution problem. Pollution that give rise to pandemic and all those things, and adverse effect on our environment, on our water system, air we breathe. So all this, we need to really develop understanding and improve. Unless humanity do that, our world will suffer. But the next three laws are more important. They are spiritual law. And the Buddha is an expert in these three spiritual law. First is the law of karma, karma niyama, followed by the law of mind, citta niyama, then the law of truth, dhamma niyama. So these three spiritual law, they are equally powerful. And because Lord Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, after his full enlightenment, he realized and understand completely what these three spiritual laws are. That's the reason why he, like the scientists, developed great spiritual understanding of the spiritual field. And because of that, he was able to come out with this very unique teaching, the Buddha Dhamma. The essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truth that can explain to us the secret of life. All of the mundane and supramundane aspect of life, he summarized them all into just this Four Noble Truth, which is the essence of his teaching. And you understand this Four Noble Truth, you will become noble ones or enlightened ones. That is the uniqueness of this teaching. That's the reason why he called it Noble Truth, not even the word ultimate truth or universal truth. There is no comparison. Okay, I'll read the short note, then maybe you can develop better understanding. So these five universal order of nature, they are Uttaniyama, Bijaniyama, Kamaniyama, Chittaniyama, and Dhammaniyama. Hence, they exhibit the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and anatta nature or non-self and empty nature. The first two are scientific law. Nature's physical law, Uttaniyama, and nature's biological order, Bijaniyama. And the next three are nature's spiritual law, namely Kamaniyama, law of karma, Chittaniyama, law of mind, and Dhammaniyama, law of Dhamma or truth as taught by the Buddha. Understanding this five universal order or law implies having right view with regards to life and existence. And this right view will enable one to have great understanding and wisdom of our existential world. Understanding Chittaniyama will also enable us to understand how our mind functions following the dwelling or law of dependent origination, the teacher Samuppada as taught by the Buddha. Then there is another part. The children of today are mostly second generation kids of the millennium generation. And nowadays parents, they are usually overprotective of this second generation children. And they tend to overpamper them in the name of loving them, hence giving rise to all the related social problems. So this was discussed based on a question by one of the Kayamitas at that time. So this one is very useful if you can develop the understanding of it. I will continue to read through, then I will explain further. This is especially common in families whose family members lack understanding of how to develop close relationship among themselves. They usually lack harmony, and the family members are seldom able to have the opportunity to discuss things or develop a line of communication to talk to each other and to discuss issues with one another openly in a very frank and sincere manner so that they can resolve all their life's problems, like relationship problem, health problem, career and financial problem, etc. So this is lacking in present day families. Because we are so concerned with our own life, especially as parents. When you grew up, first thing you are concerned with is your education. So that you can have a good education, then maybe with that good education, you can also develop a good career out of it and become successful in life, both financially and status-wise. So these are the priorities. And because of that, they spend so much of their time working towards this goal. Then they tend to neglect their own family life, even though they may have reason to get married to start a family. But most of these family, when it comes to starting a family after they have children, they tend to develop a lot of problems because they don't know how to resolve issue and problem affecting the families, and especially the spouse and their children. Then sometimes their relationship with their in-laws, their brothers and sisters, loved ones. And all these are related to the First Noble Truth realities. So without Dhamma understanding, without wisdom, it's not easy to live life because you lack understanding. When you lack understanding means you cannot have the understanding to develop the harmony, the love, and the beautiful aspect of life that you're supposed to have. Yeah. Instead, they confront life without wisdom, leading to all the misunderstanding, argument, conflict, problems. Then they develop fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. They become violent, miserable, very unhappy. So these are the issues that most family or parents and children face. Then I will read on the other aspect. Your duty as parent and also children. Do learn to play your role as responsible, good and wise parent. We are cultivating and understanding the Buddha Dharma. We are cultivating and understanding the Buddha Dharma to develop great wisdom as taught by the Buddha. Then share them with your children to guide them through life. Your duties and responsibility as parents are very important. Your basic duty is to provide for their basic need initially when they are still young, like food and shelter, clothing and education, etc. when they are young, but not to pamper them and be overprotective of them. Advise them accordingly and then allow them to make their own decision in life because it is their life. And let them be responsible for their own life decision and never force them or try to control them in any way that will cause them to dislike you or refuse to even talk or discuss matter with you. This is very important because many parents find it very difficult to actually guide their children. So they end up trying to do the obvious thing, which is wrong. They get angry, frustrated, then they try to discipline them, scold them, control them, develop all this, what they call out of fear and insecurity. You try to do what you believe to be appropriate or correct, but it end up actually mishandling it and it will backfire. You have to treat them with sensitivity, with understanding, with love. You have to have the Dhamma behind to enable you to do all those things because the Buddha, according to the Buddha, we reap what we sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. Whatever you do to your children, you try to control them, discipline them, force them into things that they don't like. In the future, you will have parents that do the same to you. If you don't want that to happen, then be a good parent. Be an open-minded, wise parent. Your duty is to guide them, to provide for them when they are young, to support them, to sacrifice for them, to do whatever you can within your means, to guide them through life and to guide them to understand life. Then there are a few more duties as lay people. Maybe you read up the Sigaluwada Sutta, it's written there. In fact, one of the duties is to arrange for their marriage. Then to guide them on the spiritual path, following the advice of the Buddha, avoid all evil, do good, purify their mind, so that they will have the good life, so that they know how to take care of their karma. So keeping of the five precepts is very important, but you need to be very tactful. When they are still young, you cannot force them. You cannot tell them, boy or girl, you have to keep the five precepts. Then if they don't keep, you started scolding them, disciplining them. Then I even saw some of the Sunday school children, after they went to Sunday school, they come back at home. When they notice their parent not keeping the five precepts, they tell the parent, they say, Papa, Mama, you are not keeping your precept. You lie. You kill and all those things. So sometimes it can be very cute. But the way to teach them is with tactfulness, with understanding. When they are still young, you should not be too forceful. You should not be like too eager to discipline them or to force them to keep all this. Because you have to understand, unless your kid understand the importance of keeping precepts, they will never really want to keep them. If you force it upon them, it's disciplining them. And all this will not work. That's why in the early days, I just bring them to Sunday school. Then let them learn, let them understand. Then when they want to know more, when the condition is there, the timing is appropriate, then I will explain. But Dhamma is such, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, condition is supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. So the way you come, everything is already meant to be coded and everything. How they become your children and how you become their parents. You have the mindfulness, awareness, and the Dhamma understand. You can see them all. You can see them all. Then you will know how to manifest accordingly and give them the appropriate training, advice, and teaching. And you will not create misunderstanding and all those things. So this aspect of application of Dhamma towards our own family, our loved ones, and our relationship with people, society, is very important. It covers the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path. If you have Noble Eightfold Path, you can become good parents. You can do your duty very well. You can apply the Dhamma very well. Then you will become a blessing to all. You can help transform society, transform living beings, and you can bring forth a lot of wholesomeness towards your loved ones, your family members, and society as a whole. Okay, then we move on to part two. Part two is about conditioned love and metta. There is a big difference. Conditioned love is not metta. There is a big difference between emotional love, conditioned love, and metta, which is universal love. For example, an example of emotional love is the usual love and hate relationship of lay people. One moment they will love each other when things go their way, and the next moment, this so-called emotional love can turn into hatred, envy, and jealousy, etc. Then there's the other type of relationship between parents and children, brothers and sisters, daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, good friends, etc., or colleagues, expressed as conditioned love. That only exists because of relationship bond. Whereas universal love or metta is love without any opposite. So sometimes we can love our own children, our brothers and sisters, or our loved ones, or our good friend, our good neighbor, and other things. It's because we feel that they are related to us, bonded to us. If it's not because of that relationship or that bonding, very few people can really cultivate metta among living beings whom they may not even know. Metta can be radiated towards all beings, regardless of whether it's related or not related. Then you can also have loving kindness towards all things, not only beings, living beings, or human beings, all things. You can have metta towards the environment too, towards the plants, the insects, the animals, or any organism or living thing. So all these are aspects of the three different types of love. And most human beings are entangled with the what they call worldly love, or what we call more towards the emotion type. So this type of love is normally dependent on the relationship. Initially, when it started, it's always very beautiful, very meaningful. But as you get to know each other longer, more and more things surface. You start to see their negative aspect of their character, which they hide from you initially during new development of relationship. I like this saying by this author, Alexander Pock, I think Pock. He has a very good saying. He wrote a book, I think, on relationship. He said, reality begins after the first day of marriage. Oh, I love that phrase. Because before marriage, normally both are very tactful. But nowadays, kids or children or younger generation, they are so different. They are not like our generation. Our generation is more like reserved type. Nowadays, they stay together first. Then they try to work it out. It cannot, never mind, go separate way. Then they change. But last time, I think because of our civilization at that time, we are more conservative type. More conservative means, especially during the 50s, the 60s, I think even early 70s. People's daughter, you cannot simply hold their hand or do funny thing. Otherwise, the parent can come and tell you, what are you going to do to my daughter? You have to take responsibility. So it means you are forced into a marriage. They can get you into that situation. But nowadays it's so different because we are no longer like before, the very conservative generation. Nowadays generation is so different. We call them the millennium kid. Even the ladies are no longer like last time, very conservative and honest. They have their philosophy, their understanding of life. And they are much, much more independent. They are career lady too, no longer like the early days. Most of them end up as housewife, serving the husband, then looking after the household, looking after the kids and all those things. But nowadays, society has transformed. And because of that, even the relationship has become different. That's why this first aspect of love, we call it the lay people's love, or more towards the emotional. emotional. Yeah. This one we need Dhamma understanding for a marriage to really has meaning. Yeah. Maybe we touch a little bit on married life. Huh? To me, as a Buddhist who understand the Dhamma, because we understand the law of karma, we cannot play a fool with marriage. Marriage is a very important understanding within the Buddhist community. If you have the Dhamma, you will understand. Because to enter into a relationship and end up marrying each other is a social contract, a legal contract that need deep understanding for it to work out well, for it to be meaningful. So usually a marriage contract is a contract that demands a couple or two person who is willing to commit themselves into a relationship and they get married. And normally the reason behind is very simple. They believe there can be relationship leading to true love, having family, then having good relationship. And two person is always better than one person to manage one's life. Even to own a house, two person paying for the house is a lot easier than one person bearing the whole thing. Then when you start a family, when you travel, when you build up your family or financial freedom or career line, two person is always better than one person because you can support each other and develop the ability to advise and assist each other in accordance with your individual's ability and speciality. The first thing we need to understand to have a successful marriage, a meaningful marriage, is both must be sincere in their approach to this relationship because it's a marriage contract, it's a legal contract. And if we are sincere, a lot of things will actually function very well. Sincerity will lead us to trust. When you are sincere, you will trust each other. And when you trust each other, problem will be reduced. Trust means what? I trust you, you trust me. Even though we are married, you can still do what you like. You can still have your friends, your whatever. I can still have mine. But the trust is, we have this very, very important trust that will enable us to trust each other because we believe we are sincere in this marriage contract. So if you trust each other, you don't be suspicious of each other, then it will reduce a lot of misunderstanding, envy, jealousy, and conflict or problem. Then sincerity will lead to trust. Trust will lead to good relationship and good life. Then because of that trust, you can go about doing your thing without problem. Without having to worry about the other party misunderstanding you or whatever. But that trust cannot be breached. The moment you breach that trust, the whole relationship is gone. So always remember that. And as a Buddhist, you will not violate that because it is one of our precepts, the third precept. Don't ever commit sexual misconduct because the consequence of it is quite serious or traumatic. Even if your relationship doesn't work out well, it's okay. You can resolve it amicably. You don't have to create a scene and develop into a full-fledged war or conflict. That envy, jealousy, hatred, all this negativity of my state They did not arise. It can be resolved amicably. But nowadays, I think people's mentality are different. They are more acceptable to this type of solution. That's why they have marriage counseling and all the things. But as Buddhists, you don't need actually. Your Dhamma is your best marriage counselor. Hold on to your Dhamma. Then do your duty well. Then you will have the good life. Yeah. So for a good relationship, apart from sincerity leading to trust and having the good life, is to understand how you can resolve issue. My advice is always like that. If it's your money, your wealth, your possession, or your career, or things involving your parents, you seek advice from your spouse, but you make the final decision. Yeah. Then there is no more argument. Then similarly, your spouse's career or things involving her career, her life, or her parents, let her make the decision. She can seek your advice. And your duty is just to advise. Of course, you can support and help to be a lot better. But the final decision is always by them. Because their money, their wealth, their career, their life, even your children, same. Do not force them into a decision or situation. Let them decide. They have to be responsible for their own life, destiny, and decision. Your duty is to advise. The advisory role is very important. It is their life. They will have to decide how they want to live their life. Otherwise, you can end up being blamed by them. They say, you advise me to take up that career, or advise me to do that. Now the business get into trouble. What are you going to do? Or they will blame you. I don't want to study this course. You forced me to study. I have seen parents who have a lot of this type of problem with their kids. Initially, they were very loving. But later on, something happened when they go overseas. Then they try to turn the problem around and blame their parents for forcing them to study that course that they don't want. And there are many life examples. So this is just to help people who wants to understand family life better so that you can resolve issue amicably. When you have this understanding, you can resolve issue amicably. So I just summarize again. Be sincere to enter into the relationship or marriage contract. Then after that, it will develop into trust. Because you are sincere, trust will arrive. When trust arrives, relationship becomes easy. Then always remember that trust cannot be breached. The moment it's breached, the whole relationship no more gone. So it can lead to a lot of consequences. So nobody will do that. Only selfish people, deluded people will do that. Because it affects many, many people. But sometimes, because of certain karmic things, they get into that relationship, then they realize it's not compatible and a lot of problem. Then it resolve it amicably so that nobody get hurt. Develop the understanding and resolve it. Need to file for separation, divorce, do it. No problem. The most important thing is to have the understanding to resolve issue amicably. Unless it is something very difficult to resolve. Means coming and all those things. Otherwise, I realize most relationships can be resolved easily. Unless it involves selfishness and all those things. Okay, then we move on. Okay, there's one more sentence, sorry. The mind that has metta is always peaceful and happy. And this one is the last one. the universal of metta. That's why this type of metta has got no opposite. It cannot develop into anger, hatred, and jealousy. Love is just love. Because it's love. That's it. Yeah, finish. No duality. That's why that metta is universal love. Yeah. It's not due to a conditioned love. It's not due to a mind making decision. Yeah. Well, this mind that is still not enlightened, the mundane mind, will be egoic, selfish, calculative. And because of that, it cannot have universal love. When things go your way, you love. When things don't go your way, the love fly out of the window. So that is selfish love. That is emotional love. Conditioned love. Not related to me. Why should I love you? So all these are more towards the lay people's type of love. Emotional and conditional. But the true spiritual love is universal love. Love knows no boundary. It's just love. Everything that you come into contact with, there is love. There is metta. Yeah. And the mind doesn't behave in such a way as to arise any negativity or mind state, like dislike, enmity, unhappiness, and all those things. The mind that has the dumb mind, the understanding, cannot do that. Where it can understand they are just the way they are. Living being is just the way they are. The way they are condition them into that mind state. So you will accept them for what they are. That's why deluded being will act deludedly. Angry people will do angry thing or act angrily. Selfish people will do selfish thing. Emotional people will do emotional thing. They are just the way they are. So when you can accept them for what they are, you can be at peace. Then we can develop metta, the compassion. To actually feel for them and radiate it to them so that it can help them to a certain extent. Then we can counsel them or help them if there is condition to do so, if they are willing to be helped, if they are willing to listen. Then this metta can actually move. It can actually reach people. You can reach out to people. Yeah. But do not be too eager to help. It can bring about problem and delusion too. When there is no condition, let things be. When there is condition, manifest. Then act. Act with wisdom. Act with understanding. Act following Noble Eightfold Path. Then you become beautiful. So I will read on this last paragraph. The mind that has metta or universal love is always peaceful and happy without any negativity of mind state or opposite. It is born of wisdom that enables one to accept the reality of the moment and always be at peace with the way things are. And one's heart is always full of metta. That is just love, understanding, joy, peace, happiness. Then we move on to part 2.2, definition of this term, samadhi. Now this term has been very often translated wrongly or explained wrongly. Samadhi here is not concentration. A lot of people define samadhi as jhana, concentration. No. If it's jhana, the Buddha might as well use the word sama jhana. Why should he use another word sama samadhi? So it's obvious. Yeah? So samadhi, for those who know, is a mind that is collected, unwavering and unmoving. Then I must add in here, it is a free mind. It must be a free mind. It's not a mind that is in concentration or absorption or a conditioned state of mind. A mind that is collected, unwavering, and unmoving, and yet it is a free mind, that is samadhi. Just like our awareness-based meditation, if you do that following my instruction, you will reach samadhi. You will develop the mind that has samadhi, the mind that is just relaxed, aware. Until it's very stable, then it becomes collected and unveiled. And when the wisdom comes to be, it develops the last enlightenment factor, upekkha. Upekkha means equanimity of mind. At the moment of sense experience, because there is samadhi, the mind does not stir, does not react. Then it can allow you to see things as they are. That's how you awaken. That's how you insight into phenomena. That's how you can see things as they are, the truth, the reality. Not what your memory, your brain, your conditioning, views and opinion tell you. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. That's how you have to act with the understanding born of the direct seeing. Then there is another aspect. With total understanding of the ever-shining, the ever-shining is our Buddha nature, our self nature, our true nature. So that is the one ever-shining within, bright, clarity, tranquil, still, just aware. Then there is also the meaning of host and master. You are the host means you are fully in charge. That's why your nature, you are like the host, always in, means fully aware, ever mindful. You are always with your nature. That's how you end up as the host. The host is ever present, like the hotel or your house. You are the host. You are always there. Then the mind is at peace, meaning mind that is heedful, silent, and tranquil, means unstirred, not disturbed. Then there are some important or useful Dhamma saying by Master Poyen Zhang Lao. Poyen Zhang Lao is our Wu Ping Ching Se Vihara, the late abbot. He passed away at the age of almost 100, I remember, many years back. So he also have a lot of very nice Dhamma saying. I got all this from Sister Lee. Actually, when I was sharing the Heart Sutta during the early years, 2012 that time, there was one day, suddenly, Sister Lee, Lee Siu Gek, he came and asked me, Bertio, can you explain to me what my master mean by all this word? So he only showed me the Mandarin word, Xing Jing, Wu Nian, Si Zhen Xing, Qi Xing, Dong Nian, Ji Wu Ming. So all this, when I saw it, I told her, this is beautiful. This is very, very profound Dhamma. That's why after that, I explained to him. Then he put it in the short note. Then I edited it and you have it down here. So these are the Dhamma saying by Master Poyen Zhang Lao. It also has its deep, profound meaning. That's why is quite similar to our Buddha Dhamma, the teaching. So here, Xing Jing means your mind is still or silent. That is your true mind. Then to make it more clear, he said, Wu Nian Si Zhen Xing. Without thought, that is the true mind. That is what Hui Ning means. The first hallmark of cultivation is Wu Nian. You must realize the state of no thought. But it must not be a conditioned state. It must be a free mind without thought. If you realize that, that is your true mind. That's the reason why when I saw this forwards, I told Miss Lee, your master is, oh sorry, five words, Your master is very wise. 无念是真心 ，without thought that is your true mind。Then 动念即无明。This one is also very beautiful. But the real Mahayana teaching is 起心动念。When you arise the mind, you stir the mind. Then here he uses it in a very more profound way. He said, the moment you move your thought, 动念即无明。It's actually the first tooling of the Paticca-samuppada. Paticca-samuppada or dwelling, dependent origination as taught by the Buddha. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara is what? Mental activity. That's why when you start your mental activity, it means what? You have avijja, ignorant. 动念即无明. So that is the meaning, the first tooling of the dwelling of Paticca-samuppada. The moment you start to move your mind, your mundane mind, arise the sankhara activity, means you are deluded. This one is for normal lay people. For enlightened being, it's not necessary. Enlightened being, they can arise the right thought. So it doesn't mean that when they move their thought, it is ignorant. No. But for lay people, most lay people is behave that way. Because for lay people, they are seldom heedful, seldom aware. Most of the time, they are lost in thought. They think a lot. And why do they think? Because they want to know. Want to know is ignorant, delusion. So wanting to know, wanting to experience, they start to think, believing that by thinking, they can understand. They can develop the knowledge. But when it is the spiritual aspect, then you know thinking is not the appropriate tool or instrument. You only use thought to live life, following Noble Eightfold Path, right view to arise the right thought. You don't use thought to harm yourself, hurt yourself, harm others. That is the wrong way of using thought. So without wisdom, the user of thought become deluded. That's how thought become wrong thought. But when you have the Dhamma with wisdom, then the user of thought is wise. Then thought become right thought. That's why for enlightened being, when they use their thought, it's not necessarily ignorant. There is always the wisdom part behind. So the wisdom part can also arise thinking. But they follow Noble Eightfold Path. Right view leading to right thought. And it's not born of ignorance or delusion. But for most human beings, unenlightened being, heedless thinking is born of ignorance. So this is just an explanation. Then when the Mahayana Sutta say that is understanding, it means wisdom. Then the last one is outflow. They always talk about outflow. Outflow, low. in Mandarin. So outflow here means defilements, evils, born of delusion. Then the eight worldly condition, 2.3. This one I think we have studied before, we have gone through before. So we will just go through it quickly. They sometimes call it the eight worldly condition, the Theravada teaching. But under Mahayana teaching, they call it the eight wind, the pa feng, or the four pairs of duality. Sorry, it should be four pairs of duality, not eight pair. Take a note, Pavasuri and Brantu. So it should be four pair. Four pairs of duality. And they are gain and loss. So gain and loss is a very important worldly condition. My teacher Jayantra always shared this with me in the early days, and I like his sharing. He said, wherever there is gain, there is loss. So if you lose something, don't worry, he said. Before you have not. So what you have lost is only losing back what you have gained. So no more suffering in there, no more misery in there. So in that sense, you can comfort yourself, eh? And develop the understanding. But when you came to this world, when you are born into this world, you came with nothing, isn't it? So before you have not, isn't it? So you understand that next time you lose your wealth, your possession, or anything that you own, yeah, don't be upset, don't be miserable. Yeah. We came with nothing and we go with nothing. That's why the Mahayana say, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Namo si zu he bi ku ku. Wei kong liu lei na, in between. Eh? So if you are born into this world, you came with nothing. Then when you die, you leave this world. Again, you don't bring along anything. You go with nothing. Then why do you? Why do one grieve over emptiness in between? Means between birth and death. So you can see the stupidity, isn't it? The delusion behind it. Yeah. Especially the Mahayana saying. I love that saying. The first time I heard about it was when I was very young. I was watching this swordsman show movie. The Wuxia Xiao Shuo. I think it's Tu Long Tao. Qi Tian Tu Long Tao. There was one blind warrior. He committed a lot of evil karma. Then he was captured by the Shaolin monk. Then the three master Shaolin monk trapped him underneath the underground. But they shut the opening with a very heavy concrete piece. Then it was complete darkness. No difference to that warrior because he was blind. Then they were chanting, the Mahayana chanting, for many months from above until he starts to calm down and develop the understanding. Then when they chant until that part, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong, namo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei na, he came to great awakening. After that, he was so calm, so peaceful. He never made any noise anymore. Until later on in the show, when his godson, is it godson? Yifu, godfather, godson, the godson, Zhang Wuji, came and rescued him. Then he told him, no, don't rescue me. I'm happy down here. So, That show was very touching and very meaningful. I only like that few stanza when he talked about you come empty, you go empty. Then why do you grieve over emptiness in between? Well, that one have a great impact upon my nature. My nature just like open up and rejoice. And I like understood life straight away. Yeah, not so real, not what you think. Because in the past, I must have cultivated it profoundly. That's like the moment I heard it, like something very familiar. Straight away from inside, there is joy. And I pick it up very fast, very fast. So Dhamma is such. So when you understand that, then gain and loss is something that we can accept. But this is a worldly condition. Like my teacher say, Ajayantra, wherever there is gain, there will be loss. And this is what the I Ching is all about. You know what is I Ching, isn't it? The Book of Change. It always teach you to be mindful of the opposite. When you are poor, you work very hard to be successful, to become what? Wealthy, rich. So you look forward to gain things. But he said, after you have become successful, after you have gained them, the next thing you have to be careful is what? Not to lose them. How to protect them, preserve them, retain them. So this I Ching is very good. It points out to you the immediate danger. Then you must actually develop the understanding that this is a worldly condition to be expected in life. Wherever there is gain, there is loss. So be mindful, be aware. So a lot of this teaching, they actually arise from the Dhamma. Then the other three pair of worldly condition is also very familiar. The Buddha always say, living being look forward to have the happy mind, happiness, joy. They don't like suffering. But the worldly condition is wherever there is happiness, there is joy, there will also be the opposite, the suffering, the misery, the sorrow, the lamentation. So you have developed the understanding of life, the first noble truth, reality, then the second noble truth. Then you will understand life and you will be able to accept all these worldly conditions in a very wise manner. Then you don't have problem in life. Then whether gain or loss, no different. But you are wise. You know how to deal with them. You know how to arise the causes and conditions for gain to arise. Then when condition is such, that thing has to separate from you, you have to lose it, let it be. But this is nature. Nature has its set of rules and law. We have to accord and flow. We have to accept the reality of the moment. So worldly condition is for us to develop the understanding of life so that we can live life. Then the third pair is praise and blame. Same. Wherever there is praise, there will be blame. So expect it in life. Don't be surprised. People can praise you. People can also blame you. There are always two sides of the coin. The duality, like in politics, they take sides. Some are pro-government, some are anti-government, anti-establishment. Then even football also, they also have their own favorite football team, Manchester United. Sometimes they go all out and become very violent when their favorite team lost. So a lot of these things you can witness in life. So praise and blame is to let you understand the ego part. When you are being praised, don't be carried away. Don't allow the ego to surface. Then when you fall, when people blame you, you become miserable. You cannot take it. These are worldly conditions. When there is condition to be praised by people, it will arise. Then with wisdom, with understanding, acknowledge it, accept it. But don't be excited by it. And don't be like carried away by it. The word is carried away by it. So that you can come back to reality again when condition change. Then people will blame you. So praise and blame is another worldly condition, a set of worldly condition. Then the last one is fame and ill fame. It's quite the same, quite similar. Except when you become famous, then you have fame. People say, oh, you are very successful. You help a lot of people. So you have fame. You earn all the fame and the honor. But when one day you committed a blunder or you did something very shameful, then people will blame you. Ill fame. Then your reputation all gone. Your honor all gone. Then people start to say bad things about you. And your fame is no more. So these are the eight pair of worldly conditions, realities of life and existence. With Dhamma understanding, you can confront them. you can accept them for what they are, and you can experience them because they are just part of the worldly condition. Okay, then we move on. Part three. Do not cling on to the eight worldly conditions. See the importance of cultivating the equanimity enlightenment factor that is needed to liberate the mind. So without the last factor of enlightenment, equanimity, you can be misled by the eight worldly conditions. You can get yourself into trouble because you lack equanimity. When people blame you, you become very miserable, very unhappy. When they praise you, you carry it away. Then when you become successful, you earn a lot of fame. People get to know you, your reputation and all those things, your family background. But there is always the two aspects of life. Whenever there is condition for you to be happy, joyful, make use of it. I used to say, what do you call? Pamper yourself a bit. Have the good life. Be happy. If you have the condition, develop the joy. So happiness and joy is part of the what they call mind state that a lay person should have. So to be happy, to be peaceful, to be joyful is one of the feel good mind state that you can have. So like the four type of happiness that the Buddha explained, the first type of happiness is happiness of possession, means when you own thing, born of proper livelihood, you have earned them in the proper manner. Then there is a type of joy. That is happiness. That is joy. You can have them, the Buddha said. Then when you are able to make use of what you own, your wealth, your possession, your materialistic possession or whatever that you have for the good of the many, to help people, to help your loved ones, there is a type of joy. So when that joy arises, you should actually treasure it, cherish it, and thank your good karma that you have the condition to have them. So a Dhamma practitioner, cultivator who has the wisdom, will have a lot of occasion to develop the joy and the happiness in life. They will also have this rejoicing quality, mudita. That's why they always express this joy, this happiness. Then their meditative mind always gives them the tranquility, the peacefulness of mind, the clarity of mind, the stillness of mind, the joy within. When you are peaceful and calm, you have pity, joy. So all these are beautiful mind states. Then if you have the Dhamma understanding, you know how to arise the causes and conditions to reap all of your good karma, your good merits and wholesomeness, then you can develop a lot of gain. You can gain your wealth, your reputation, to be successful, your career and honesty. So gain can come the proper way to your wholesomeness, your merits, your karmic, good karmic path, wholesomeness. So all this will cover what joy and happiness is. Okay, then meditation, part three. Purpose of meditation. The deeper state of meditation are needed to allow the stillness and the cessation of form and mind, means to realize Nibbana, to develop the stability, to develop and stabilize via wisdom. The two main purposes of meditation are to stabilize the silent mind and tranquil, heedful mind via a combination of relaxation, clear awareness, wisdom, and understanding. So our true mind can be stabilized, the understanding of it. This silent mind, the self nature, the true mind, need to be realized. And in the five stages of Bodhi mind development, you have to actually develop the awareness of it until you can illuminate that self nature, until it becomes very clear to you. That's why you, the ever shining, the true nature, the bright nature, you should illuminate it until it's very clear, until you understand what that self nature is. Then you will understand the unconditioned. Then you will understand how the mundane mind arises, how from there everything comes to be. So the first aspect is, the first main purpose is to stabilize that silent mind or self nature, the silent and tranquil, heedful mind. You can do it via a combination of relaxation, clear awareness, maintain it, then develop wisdom and understanding to stabilize it. When the wisdom and understanding is there, it will not stir, it will not react, it will not create movement, it will be in the state of samadhi, ever mindful most of the time. That's why you must know how to relax, maintain clear awareness, and stabilize it with understanding wisdom, the three turning wisdom, especially second turning and the third turning. Then to use this still, tranquil mind to investigate clearly into all the Dhamma and phenomena, both internally and externally within life, to realize the wisdom and the enlightenment needed to free the mind. So this is the meditative aspect. Then after that, Brethil also shared with us his own cultivation and how he came out into the private sector to test himself in the year 1989. Now for detail, please listen to the 14th Heart Sutta recording dated 25th of May 2012. So this one, I leave it to you. How I came out into the private sector to test myself. You remember that year 1989, I told you? I realized the Dhamma, my nature understood what the thing is. Then I decide, I make a decision to come out into the private sector because I was already very comfortable working in a statutory body at that time. Then I have reached the level of understanding and training of mind until nothing can disturb my mind already. So the last thing I want to do is to come out into the private sector, which I know is very different, full of challenges, very hectic. Because for people to pay you, private sector pay, they also squeeze you. So they expect you to actually perform and deliver. So I just want to find out whether in that condition I can fit into the private sector life or not. That's how I decide to come out to test. And it happened because there was condition. The condition was so beautiful. When I was in the second year in the university, I actually make a pure wish to help somebody when there is condition. Because this classmate of mine helped me before. Over some minor issue involving the motorbike that he lent to me. I get involved with a slight accident, but he didn't scold me, he didn't do anything. He was actually very nice towards me. And he was so happy that finally he got to repair his motorbike because the Volvo owner who actually banged on the motorbike was so kind. He gave me his name card. He said, all the repair for your motorbike, you don't worry. As long as you are not hurt, you go and do the repair. Then call me. I will go and settle the bill. So he was very happy. He took the card from me and he go and repair all the things that he need to repair. So win-win situation. But because I knew he was very kind, he didn't even get angry or shouted at me or asked me what happened. No, he didn't. He just let me explain. Then he was so happy. And he always treated me well. And because of that, I vowed to help him in this condition. Then he came to my house that year, Chinese New Year, I remember. Then he said he was looking for a very senior engineer, private sector. He was with a consulting firm. That's how the condition arrived. Then after they all left, all the classmates, I reflected and contemplated. Then I realized, hey, maybe that it was the condition. Then I decided to give him a call. And he was so surprised. He said, you sure not? He said, I cannot afford you, you know, because that time I was having my super scale. And that time was just after that recession, I think, 1986, 87, 88, the very severe recession. But 89, I think it turned around already. So that time I also was good timing. Huh? I wanted to come out into the private sector and test myself. That's why I called him up. Then I told him, don't worry, I come over to help you. Then don't worry. Then that's how I came out into the private sector. And I worked for him for 6 over years until 1996, almost 7 years. Then I left for my final destination. I haven't worked for a listed company before. I want to experience what is it like and how is it like to be given share option ESOS. That's why I reached the pinnacle of my career. I went through all the career life, career path that a civil engineer can take. And I reached the pinnacle of it. Then I even get to experience the private sector life and the listing status, the ESOS and all those things. That's how I realized fulfillment in my career, in my lay life. So I reached the pinnacle of my career life. Then I achieve all the happiness that living being can have, including the spiritual. You can read the seminar book, it's all written there. So that is the history behind. The rest, go and listen to the recording. Okay, we finish. Oh, exactly, 10:10. So just nice. So we end here. So we end page 83. Next class, we will continue with lesson 50, page 84. So we will open up for meditation, reporting, and Q&A. If you have any question, you can straight away wave your hand or come in. Just off your speaker and come in while I have a drink. Anybody? Anybody?
You don't mind, brother?
Yeah, Adam, yes.
This is Adam.
Yeah. You have any...
Yeah.
You want to report your meditation?
Report for my meditation. During my daily meditation today, the past few days I did gardening again, and then while doing gardening, I realized that my action of raking the to dig the hole to plant something, I've killed grasses. I pull out the grasses. My action to pull out the grass may have caused damages to the environment, and also while digging for the soil, so a few of the worms, they are injured as well, so I faster shift them away, but I just think that my action also create another suffering. But I did all this while
thinking of any question related to what you do. Do you have any question related to what you do? Or you want to describe them?
I think I describe them first, then later I will ask repeat. But is because while doing all this, I noticed is there is a lot of
yeah, that is what you notice. Then what do you do when you notice?
I ask for forgiveness. I ask for forgiveness.
Oh, okay.
Because while doing all this, I know that I cause them suffering, but we also need to provide for ourselves, which to grow the plants, to grow the food. So
that is your justification. Yeah. Yeah, continue. Yes.
So yeah, I know that what I do is wrong, but because of like to you said justification for us to live our life. So I don't know, we can't just like, you know, just don't do anything and just wait for things.
That's right. That is your justification. That is your view. That is how you look at it. But if you have the Dhamma, you will not do it that way. That's the reason why I asked you, do you have any question? Because based on your understanding now, all these things like is giving you problem. It's like precept. Keeping precept is a problem. It's a burden on you. And you try to justify by saying that you have to grow plant, you have to do things, that's why you have to do all those things. But when it comes to the Dhamma training, the precept, you must understand the fundamental advice of the Buddha. We undertake the training rule. That one is very important. Have you undertaken the training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings? That training rule is mindfulness, awareness, heedfulness. That's why you have daily mindfulness when you go about doing your thing. There is an awareness within and you are sensitive. Whatever you do, you don't do it in a rushy manner. Maybe first time you might not expect worm and all those things, or even that plant, how actually you tear off and all those things. You may not experience it. So first time you do it is excusable. But after you experience it, in future, you need to be more tactful. And when you are mindful or whatever, you can do it in a very different manner. That's why those who plow their land to grow whatever, fruits or paddy or anything, or wheat, they have to do certain things. But within nature, there are various types of nature's law that governs life and existence. So as long as your intention is sincere, you try your very best to be sensitive to minimize all this killing and harm. But sometimes certain things in nature you cannot avoid. Like you have to plow the field. You have to plant things over large plot of area. Sometimes developer has to clear quite massive site clearing in order to do their housing and all those things. But you must have mitigation measure. You must be sensitive and you must do it tactfully. You don't do it insensitively just because of profit and all those things. So these are the understanding that a cultivator will develop. And when you have them, you become different. That's why when you understand the teaching, it becomes a training rule. You train yourself to abstain. Means what? You train yourself in sensitivity and mindfulness. You are sensitive. You are mindful. You try your very best to avoid all these things. Because the key thing is the intention. You don't have the intention to purposely kill and harm. But you cannot use it to justify, like you say, because I need to plant, I need to have food. No, I have to do this. Yes, you have to do, but you can do it tactfully, mindfully. And there are many other ways to go about doing it. Okay? Hopefully with that, you can develop better understanding and improve on yourself as you go through your daily life. Okay. Adam?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sadhu. Anything else?
This one maybe is not related.
Okay. Yeah. Then never mind. Yeah? We let others try. Yeah? Anybody else? Is Brother Tim around? Brother Tim? Mama Suri? Is Brother Tim around?
Yes, he's around.
Yeah.
Oh, Brother Tim? Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Very good, good, very good.
Yeah.
I'm down there listening.
I wanted to call you today to maybe share something because that day I told my daughter and my wife, I said, you don't look at Brother Tim quiet. He is actually very wise. But he understands a lot of Dhamma.
I don't know whether it's wise one or wise.
It's definitely wise. Yeah, you understand a lot and you have helped out a lot. So in the
thank you.
The way we come out with all the books, actually Pamasuri and Bertium is the main one. Yeah, he's the IT guy, and he's very humble. People who don't know him may not know him. He's very quiet. Sometimes Pamasuri also told me, tiam, but inside, has a lot of good understanding. Yeah, I want you to share a bit, you don't mind, so that people can have faith.
What to share?
Whatever that you have gone through, then how it has helped you, career-wise, life-wise, and many other things. I remember the first time you met me, not long after you came to the Thursday class.
Yeah.
You took me and my wife for dinner. You remember?
Yeah.
And me for, then you thanked me. At first, I was quite confused. Why you thank me? Oh, then later when you told me, then I said, you can start from there or whatever.
I were to share, it might take a few of your classes. I don't know, certain, maybe a starting point.
Yes.
Relative you have shared. Very applicable in life.
That is the aspect.
When I say in life, if we look at ourselves, about relationships.
Yes.
Relationship to yourself, relationship to loved one, relationship to your colleagues, relationship to even to your environment,
environment, yes.
This understanding is very applicable,
and very useful.
Very useful. So if you look at all the teaching, once you understand, then your relationship, you have a better understanding of the relationship.
Yes.
To yourself, to your. When I thank you, it's actually the teaching that has made a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Me, and also to Pamasuri. If you see Pamasuri, she has been trying.
Yeah.
See a lot of changes. You may see one side, I see maybe. Behind the scenes, I see a lot. That's what I'm very grateful for.
Because she has changed for the better.
Has changed,
changed a lot for the better. And improved a lot too recently. Sadhu.
For that, I'm very grateful.
Sadhu.
And the teaching, I think the meditation, whatever we do, like you say, you got to understand it.
Yeah.
And
You need to have understanding. Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes understanding doesn't just come like that.
Correct.
You got to contemplate a lot.
Contemplate a lot, reflect.
Reflect, and then, like I say, in relationship, you got to reflect.
Yeah.
Against the nature of your
relationship,
how it's like, you know, really happy, not happy.
Yeah. It makes you more sensitive.
Why is it not happy, you know?
Yeah. Then it makes you more sensitive, more mindful,
more
understanding.
That thing about sensitivity, I think that's very important.
Yeah.
The understanding you are sensitive to yourself and to
others, the environment.
Others as well.
Also the environment and all those things. Then we develop this compassion, love. Naturally, through the understanding of the Dhamma.
Yeah, the understanding will open up your heart and
compassion
will come.
Yes.
Compassion will come. Yeah.
Mm, sadhu, very good. Thank you so much. Your daughter also not bad, Your daughter, she every time texts me. But because of the Dhamma, it helped her a lot too.
Yeah, she has matured a lot.
Matured a lot, yeah.
I'm also very grateful that the kind of decisions both my son and daughter made crisis. We over here, we look over there. It is so so severe. Germany and all.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of fear here, but they look at it quite differently, I think.
Yeah. The way they look at it. Yes.
We wanted them to come back actually, but they.
You said no need.
You said no need.
Yeah.
So by coming back, I think they feel that they create more exposures.
Yeah.
I think they made some kind of a wise decision.
Yeah. It turned out to be a blessing in disguise.
So they say stay put.
Actually, that was a very wise decision, a blessing in disguise. Now you look at you look at Shanghai, it's the safest place to be in.
The lockdown is not easy, I mean,
not easy.
Almost 90 days in your own room. But so your teaching helps them.
Help them a lot, yes, I do. Also like my daughter say, she go through all this, is the experience that they actually get to experience all this.
That
never happened before. I think a lot of us also having it for the first time, lockdown for so long. It's really an experience, very interesting. And with the Dhamma, we can handle them. We can have a different mind state, different understanding. Then we can.
And as you go through the lockdown, you see the progress, the changes in your mind state, your emotion. Sensitive to it, you understand.
Yes.
How these things develop and how you would react to it, understand it, and all those
things. Very good. Thank you so much, Matthew, for the good share.
No problem.
Sadhu.
Thank you to you, actually.
We all rejoice. Sadhu. So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Okay, nearly 10:30.